Reese, and welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 339. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson coming at you from here on the beach in Darwin near Dripstone. It's about an hour before sunset on Saturday, the 10th of October, something like that. The show is about formulating a big picture assessment of what I call the Australian whale anomaly, this sequence of events that's been going on for the past month, involving first a humpback whale who went up the Alligator River in Kakadu, and then on the very day, which was the equinox, the very day that he was successfully returned to the ocean on his own, over 500 pilot whales began to strand in western Tasmania. And I've been monitoring all this stuff. This is my fourth show in a row dedicated to all this. And I won't go into too much details about what happened, but of the 500 or so that stranded in Tasmania, about 115 were successfully refloated and the rest are dead. And much to their credit, the Department of Parks, Water, and Energy and Environment, DPIPWE, primary industries, they have not offered any causes as to why it happened. And as I told them on the phone, that's really the only intelligent thing you can do. You can never say one certain thing caused it. And even if you believe that to be true, you can never prove it, no matter what it was. And so the only intelligent thing is to look at the full spectrum of possibilities that could contribute to something like that, and use what I call my domain overlay complexity assessment platform, which allows you to contrast the existing world of all the forces of nature and influences that might have been a factor in whale and dolphin strandings before humans even existed. All of those factors would still be at work and in existence now. Overlaid on top of that is the entire spectrum of anthropogenic influences and effects that's been steadily building, really since we first started traveling in the ocean, but really in the 20th century when the oceans became very militarized and the military-industrial complex, the technological juggernaut running off the rail. So strandings happen. They're unusual, but not statistically abnormal, because they happen often, and probably most of the ones that happen we never know about. So, to me, it's interesting to look at, there's nobody to blame. I mean, even if there was clear-cut evidence, and I believe we've got reasonable, circumstantial evidence that there were at least three different anthropogenic influences in relative proximity to this stranding. One of them was rocket launches from South Australia. Another one was war games with India and Australia navies in the southeastern Indian Ocean. And the other one was ongoing seismic activity, seismic testing for hydrocarbons in the Otway Basin, just off of King Island. That's the closest. But, you know, a distance of several hundred kilometers for things as loud as a rocket in an ocean, in a water environment where sound travels much further, faster, and more intensely than in air, and with beings like the whales that are extremely sensitive acoustically, and that, according to Chris Clark of Cornell, they can hear thunderstorms 1,000 miles away. So if we look at what these two anomalous events have in common with both the humpback and the pilot whales, they went up a river a significant ways, which is fresh water. Not all of the pilot whales, but about at least between 200 and 300 went 10 kilometers up this river that's fresh water. And the humpback went about 30 kilometers up this river, which is fresh water. Mm-hmm. It's tidal. They're both tidal, meaning that there's a constantly changing blend of fresh and salt water with changing salinity and densities and stuff like that. And one of the Dipipui people was going to try to use the idea of a freshwater lens, which is really something that happens with underground aquifers, that created some kind of distortion in their sonar. But so what they've done is they both went, they, for whatever reason, they were getting out of the ocean and up into a river that was a body of fresh water, traveling significant distances into areas where they don't normally live, into areas of high amounts of fresh water as opposed to salt water. This is not where they usually live, and they're probably putting themselves at risk, probably knowingly, by going in these places. And also putting themselves into closer contact with people. And they may or may not have known ahead of time that this would happen. But so this is what we can say from a behavioral perspective. This is what they did. We can't say anything about why they did it, what they were thinking, what their motivation was, but I don't think Mr. Humpback was fleeing anything. I think he was progressing on a journey or a mission. That's what I think. And I think the pilot whales were fleeing something. They were trying to get away. They were trying to get into an area where they thought they might be safe from whatever it was that might be attacking them or pursuing them, and trying to get in an area where it was safe. And in stranding themselves, they were possibly trying to get out of the ocean for long enough to escape and to get their ears out of the water, which would reduce their hearing, because the bombardment from whatever it was that was attacking them was probably primarily coming at them in an acoustic kind of way. And I wrote a little story, a possible scenario, about what might have happened. They might have got caught in the middle of a convergence of a naval war game, a rocket launch, and against the background of seismic testing and shipping and construction and stuff like that. And all these weird things started blowing up and exploding and launching around them and zipping through the water and everything. And they thought they were under attack by some kind of giant monster, kind of like War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast in 1938. And I actually compared these two things, because if you look at the psychology of panic, very interesting to contrast. So anyway, if we look kind of at the big picture of what's happened with the pilot whales, one of the things is what I call awareness of the situational, well, it's what they call situational awareness. That's a military jargon for kind of being aware of everything that's going on around you, situational awareness. And so we were made aware of their situational awareness, what we know and don't know about the ocean is the big variable here. So what I've tried to do, and part of my ongoing work, is to map out all these different natural and anthropogenic influences, which is huge. And mapping out the spectrum of anthropogenic activity, I've made up a new acronym. It's a summation of all the known negative influences. High Resolution Global Ocean Threat Assessment, HRGOTA. And so the important thing is, where I'm trying to go with this email, this show, is what I touched on at the end of the last blog post, was how this is really entering the realm of what I call geoterrorism, a concept I created in the wake of the Christchurch earthquake in Fukushima back in February, March of 2011, geoterrorism. And by extension, So if we look at all the stuff that's affecting life in the ocean, and a lot of this includes sort of newer level, new paradigm revolution in military affairs, technologies like electromagnetic stuff, the use of space and satellites and rockets, the network-centric thing where everything's in real-time communication with electronic networks of sensors and all this different kind of stuff like that, and the use of drones and unmanned autonomous vehicles and all this different kind of stuff. It's just really unbelievable how much of it there is, but this is the leading edge. And so anything that's happening in the ocean with all this is also happening on land and in the air, even more so. So what I'm saying is, anything like this that's happening with the whales and dolphins is also affecting us. And so a big part of this whole issue is the centrality and the hugeness, yet the relative obscurity or invisibility of the whole military world mega machine. And this is where the work of Rosalie Bertell and Claudia von Werloff are very central, because that's exactly the issue and problem that they're addressing with their work. So in a way, it's academic to pursue all this, because, and I think it is important for us to know, because it's not some evil them that's doing the military-industrial complex. It's us. It's Homo sapiens. It's our species. And you and I and everybody, all of our tax money and tax dollars goes to pay for it. And every time we buy hydrocarbon fuel, we're paying for the oil industry. And every time we eat fish, we're paying for the trawlers and stuff. And we're all part of it. And so we're helping to keep it going. But yet, if any of us at the individual level just stopped participating in it, it's really not going to matter, because it's just going to keep rolling on and on. And I think that even if the majority of humans didn't even exist anymore, that the same military mega machine is not going to reduce in size. It's just going to keep growing and keep festering and expanding and consuming and taking over, because it has nothing to do with life as we know it. It's kind of like Jerry Mander talks about in his book, In the Absence of the Sacred. He coined the term megatechnology, which is very, very important. And he talks about the central component that makes megatechnology possible is computers, because all the stuff runs on computers. It's all made possible, manufactured, and operated by computers. Without computers, none of this high-tech stuff could possibly exist. And so we get into the realm of it's actually beyond science fiction. Dr. John Lilly, whose dolphin communication group I worked with back in around 1979, 1980, 1981 in the Bay Area of California, made many, many, many major contributions to science. And he did some dark stuff like kill dolphins to study their brains and all different, subjected them to all kind of tortuous experiments and stuff, but he had a lot of respect for their abilities as quote-unquote intelligent beings. And even though I ended up terminating my involvement with his dolphin group because he said before they even got the two dolphins from Mississippi, Joe and Rosie, before he even got them, they said they were only going to keep them captive for about a year while they developed the necessary computer hardware and software in order to work with free-swimming ones from a boat. But the year came and went, and another year came and went, and it ended up being, they had them for more than 5 years. And the dolphins, even during the few months that I was there, I saw them. I was there. I was tipped off and invited to go to the lab on the very day that Joe and Rosie arrived there. So I was able to see them, how happy they were. They were just constantly jumping and leaping out of the water. And then they invited me over to meet them and have my swim with them about a month or so later. And they were much more subdued, but still very, very joyful beings. But anyway, beyond Lily's work with the whales and dolphins specifically, he came up with the idea through some of his kind of altered state experiences that human activity is being directed and influenced below our level of awareness by what he calls a solid state entity. It's, I don't know if a life form is the right word, but some kind of intelligence or something that's, its physical manifestation is based on silicon, not carbon, like life as we know it. So silicon is what computers are made of, but it's also the most abundant element in the Earth's crust. And so his vision, which has appeared in some science fiction, is that the solid state entity is using us to construct it, and it gradually is going to take over with its own agenda, because it doesn't like life as we know it. It only likes us as a way to build it, and it's really inimical. It really hates water, especially ocean water and the whales and dolphins, because ocean water and electronics really just don't get on. I can tell you that because of two or three cameras I've lost and phones. You get salt water on a camera or a phone, it's just dead. It's instantly corroded. And so Lily theorized that the solid-state entity was controlling our military, especially the Navy, and guiding the military to essentially wage war on the whales and dolphins. And you don't really need this quasi-science fiction scenario to describe the military's view of the whales and dolphins, because Admiral William Nirenberg, who was the head of NATO back in the late 1960s, wrote a chapter called The Militarized Ocean, where he said that they view anything in the ocean that's big enough to create a sonar blip, they call it biological interference. So their goal is to get rid of biological interference. This would explain all these massive Navy campaigns to take or harass tens of millions of marine mammals. Rosalind Peterson really talked about that, and it could be that when they're getting ready to do these war games, like they just did in the Indian Ocean or at RIMPAC around Hawaii or anywhere they go on, and who knows how many war games they're going on at any different time, one of the things they might do as part of the new, or maybe it's even been going on for a long time, they might try to send out shockwaves of sound or any kind of other sort of terrorism activities that might try to get rid of or scatter any groups of whales and dolphins that are in the whole area. Whether it's explosions or sounds that sounds like monsters or sounds of their enemy like orcas, or this could be some kind of pre-war operation that they do. They try to get any whales or dolphins that are within 1,000-kilometer radius of where they're going to be doing their activities, and then try to get rid of them. So that's not an impossible scenario. And so our poor little pilot whales from 3 weeks ago might have been the victims of something like that. We'll never know. But my beautiful little friends, they're in all my artwork now. But we're crossing a threshold where computers and artificial intelligence and stuff are taking over everything. There's a lot of computers that fly planes. There's even discussions now about who should have the final say in military planes. Does it come down to the human pilot or the computer? You've got, who knows? I mean, this is just what we know. For all we know, DARPA might have things like replicants or like the Terminator already. And we've got drones and unmanned vehicles that do all kinds of stuff. But what's really scary to me is there could actually be officers in the military that are actually computer programs. And they might have a name, they might have a rank, they might have a voice. They might even be in a body that looks like a human, or they could just be a disembodied computer intelligence that people never meet. But in terms of these making big-scale decisions and stuff like that, they could be part of the decision-making loop that are performing very important functions that other people, especially those below them, don't even know that that's what it is. So when it comes down to it, what kind of decisions are these entities going to be making? And then beyond that, we're really crossing into this, the Atlantean discontinuity threshold, where we're tampering with not even just the forces of Mother Earth, but the forces of the magnetosphere and the magnetic fields and the ionosphere and the whole heliocosm that has a lot to do with the energy from the sun and how Earth interacts with rogue planetoids and bodies like asteroids and comets that come through. And we're just coming up on the last week in October. It's going to be, for a couple of weeks, it's one of two Anka, that's E-N-C-K-E, one of two Anka windows, times of the year when the Earth passes through the debris from the leftover from the supercomet Anka that is believed to have been involved in several sort of huge climate change, mass extinction events here on Earth. Very, very, very important. So, even though to me, the entire military global mega machine is so entrenched and embedded that we couldn't possibly stop it or turn it off even if we wanted to, and not that we do. And I think the best thing we can do is to keep honoring the beauty and power of being here now and loving our fellow beings, trying to walk our highest talk and to understand what's really going on, to make the military thing visible and to be aware of what our species is wreaking on the Earth, and to continue to map out what all these threats are, because any little change that we can make for the better is going to help to lessen the severity of the Day of Purification, which is what Hopi Elder Thomas Banyaka told us about. The Day of Purification is kind of like what happened when Atlantis went down, only on a much bigger scale, a planetary scale, where everything that's out of balance with life gets taken out so that life can get a foothold on the healing process and start over anew. So another thing that this has all brought a lot of attention to me, and again I'd like to thank Ben Vigen of Postman Productions in New Zealand for alerting us to the rocket launch. But the whole thing with space, the Starlink satellites that Elon Musk is putting up, there's over 700 up now, but only of maybe a 10,000 that they want to put up. And these are lower down, in a lower orbit than other satellites, to give more intense microwave coverage. And this is really dangerous. And all this stuff is going to be over the ocean too. It's not just over the land. But another problem is looking at how much pollution in the ocean is happening or has happened because of stuff being launched into space, whether it's booster lower stages from rockets falling in the ocean harmlessly into the ocean, like Duncan Steele said, where there's nobody there that can get hurt, or stuff falling from orbit, or, you know, fuel leaking and just all this. It's something I never really thought about before, but they're estimating that between 30 and 40,000 rockets have now been launched since, you know, rockets were invented in the 1940s. So we've got this whole army of Frankensteins of the deep. But what I think is happening with me is that the consciousness of the whales and dolphins is able to communicate with people like me, and in a two-way thing where I can get sort of or formulate holographic images or pictures from them that help me understand what's going on in the ocean and the cosmos. And I'm translating a lot of this into my art. And then I'm also able to form pictures in my mind and visually that share with them big picture maps that I'm able to ascertain and create based on my increasing awareness of what the military is doing and the whole network of all the weaponized geophysical warfare technologies and stuff like that, to help them understand what it is that they're under attack from. And so if they understand that it's not a supernatural monster, it's actually us. And that would really, this is the message I'm trying to get through to them now, and that would really, it might break their hearts. And that might be why they're so sad, when they realize that this stuff that's the most insidious, dangerous, evil things they've ever encountered, being attacked by rocket launches and torpedoes and microwaves and explosions and sonar and all this stuff, when they realize that that's us, Homo sapiens, man, the wise, who we've always been their friend. They taught us how to be people millions of years ago. So to realize that it's us doing that to them, they get like, but why? Why, people? Why are you hurting us? We're your very most beautiful friends on the whole planet, and we love you. And we just can't, it's driving us to the brink of trying to protect ourselves and putting ourselves at risk, like going up the river and stranding on the beach to get our ears out of the water to stop the deafening sound. So this is their message. This is my message to humanity. We need to understand all this to the best of our ability and do our best to reduce our own individual consumption and to transform Wasichu Koyanaskatsi into Lolomai Kuakatsi on behalf of Mitikaya Ilyasin. And I'm working on creating some new charts about that shows the world of the whales in terms of all the different inputs that they have and stuff that they're aware of, heliocosmically and environmentally. And a genome of Gamaea, which shows all the anthropogenic influences and the HTE, holo-tele-eidetically shared imagery, and trying to understand what I'm calling oceanic eco-biopathy. Well, Mars is shining really bright in the sky this evening, and the moon is near third quarter. I'm sitting by the ocean. We had record rainfall in Darwin last week. We had 170 mils in 24 hours, and I've been really having amazing encounters with the frogs, listening to their sounds and recording them and noticing how they change over the night, going from sounding like they're saying root, 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 then they're saying brewery, 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 then they're saying, I mean, this is pretty clear. I've got recordings so other people can hear, but it sounds like then they're saying wet, 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 dep, 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 yep, 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 yep. And I'm not sure if it's different kind of frogs or if it's the sound of the same frog changing over the night. And also, they laid some eggs in my bucket of water, so now I've put those in two little bowls, and I've got my little tadpole farms. And unbelievable how much they grow from day to day. Oh my God. I put the remnant of an ear of corn in there, and they seem to be munching on that. So we'll have corn-fed tadpoles. I'll put some lettuce in there tomorrow. And it's really, really cool. Really lovely to be here. And anyway, I'll sign off for now. Maybe next week I'll do a show dedicated to New Zealand. Maybe tentatively called Land of the Long White Lie. And maybe bring in some of the interview I did with environmental attorney Sue Gray. And then on the next week's show, I'll go to talk about the comets and asteroids of the Anka window. Anyway, This is Jeff Phillips-Weferson signing off here from beautiful Darwin right before sunset. Send love for the pilot whales and Mr. Humpback and all the whales and dolphins and all of our family of life. And may all beings be peaceful. May all beings be happy. Good day.
Thank you. was in the forest.
Intelligent Radio.